Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where
welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. It is Monday, January 30. No, it's not. It's February. It got away from me.
February the 3rd.
February 3rd. Okay, I am back in the right universe now.
Yes, how about that?
And I'm Fanny Crawford, your slightly addled storytelling co-host.
And I'm Stasi Olkowski, who is a lot more than slightly addled at times. But we have a good time here for you today.
We do. And today is our first Valentine Day storytelling hour for 2020. You never know. There may be more.
Right. We're leading
that's
in.
That's what's happening today.
Right?
Yeah.
We may go on for a couple of weeks telling stories about this stuff.
Well, not on this show.
Wow.
I mean, we have to stop sometime. I'm going to want dinner.
Oh, I meant periodically.
Yeah, okay. I thought maybe you had a marathon in mind.
No. But, that's something. Have you ever thought about doing that?
What, 24 hours of storytelling?
Yes.
On the air?
No, not on the air. But in Pittsburgh, we did that.
Was there a special occasion? Was it like Festival of the Light Bulb?
No, it was like near Christmas time.
Darkest night of the year.
Well, it was during like the month when they have Santa Claus set up in this big parking lot and lots of vendors and stuff.
You did it outside?
And the group did it. I didn't take part because we were traveling.
Santa Claus. Oh, okay.
Well, no, I was traveling. Oh, no.
24 hours of Santa Claus.
Pittsburgh has its own Santa Claus that is on, what do you call that? On, like, salary?
Oh,
who was in the
on
parade.
On retainer?
It was in the parade at Thanksgiving, and who does this building in the parking lot for a month, and he travels around representing the city.
Wow.
And his name is John, and he's wonderful. He became a friend of mine. He's a storyteller. He just became one when he met us. And he's really wonderful, and he's a great, funny guy. Very, very serious Christian. I was so surprised when I found out how funny he was, because he really, he goes to church a lot, and he talks. But anyway, he and I look a bit alike. He's bigger, but, beard and all this stuff. And at Christmas time, lots of people look at me and say, hey, you can play Santa Claus. Well, Terry and I went to see him. And if you pay a certain amount, they'll take your picture, and you get and they'll give it to you right there. They put it in a frame and all this. That's really nice. And they do it with the kids. It's not as, I think it was $10, like to sit on his lap and all stuff. And we went in at a time when it was a break, so that there were no children around waiting in line or anything. And he did this to me a number of times. He said, "Ha, so you're back." And I said, "Hi, John." And he said, he told the two girls working with him at his elves, "This is my father. He abandoned us when I was a child. And he follows me every once in a while and comes and shows up at these things. He's probably going to ask for money." Terry and I were so astonished. And then he's pretty tall. He comes over and gives us a bear hug, and tells the girls what a great
Okay,
friend.
But you forgot to tell me about the all-night storytelling.
Yeah, well, I was traveling. I had a thing planned then where I was going to be away, but the group did it. They got a bunch of people together and they rotated, but they would tell stories for 45 minutes, and then somebody else would get up.
Wow.
And they did it all night long. I was really proud of them. There weren't many people there.
I think I'd be a little scared of them.
I think Alan said after like
midnight,
1:45 or so, the one o'clock hour
yeah.
really thinned out.
That's when you needed beer.
Because there were bars not too far. And so for a while they got it. So when it got to about 2 o'clock and pretty much everything in the city was shut down, even the theaters, you know, stuff. And but they kept it up, which I was really pleased that they did.
You have to pay. In addition to having the storytellers committed, you have to get a committed audience who will. There will always be three people there listening to you. No,
doesn't matter.
Just it would matter to me.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Well, I want to say thank you to Andy Offit Irwin for allowing us to use Tarry Here to open our show.
Yes.
If you don't know Andy Offit Irwin as a musician or a whistler or a storyteller, you should check him out online.
And if you ever want to sing along with him, I have the words.
All right. Someday.
I've had those words on my clipboard for months at least. Hmm. Maybe a couple years.
Well, maybe you can sing along sometime.
I just realized that one of the papers I carry with me all the time is...
You never know when you might need the words to Tarry Here.
I might be stopped on a highway or something that I have to prove.
Okay. Well, you have a bunch of storytelling things you should talk about.
Oh, yes. I could actually tell the lineup of a couple of different storytelling activities.
Okay.
First of all, closest to our hearts, the Antietam Storytelling Guild.
Yay!
We have something coming up on February 8th from 2 to 4. There will be five storytellers.
Five tellers?
Five storytellers.
We've morphed.
Yes. Mark Brew, who is our president. And I wonder if he knows that. It's the first time I've said that. Anyway, he's in charge of the guild. And there will be Fanny Crawford.
No.
There will be...
Does she know about that?
She better.
Okay.
But she has plenty of time. There's like 8 days before
that happens.
That's
right. There you go.
And that's enough time for her to create three events.
I might even write a novel
while
I'm about it. Okay.
Larry Hayes, Laura First.
Yay, and, Laura. I'm glad she's able to do that.
And yours truly.
All right.
So
that is fine.
I'm really looking forward to that. And Mark has it arranged so that we're going to tell a... longer story first, 10 to 12 minutes, which, you know, for some of us might be a little bit more than that. But, and then we'll go through the rotation, and then the second rotation will be short stories.
Okay.
You know.
I already have possibilities.
No.
I haven't narrowed it down yet, but yes. I've got.
I have mine.
Okay. So. And after that, are there other things you want to announce?
Well, and we have four more dates at the Hagerstown Library at 100 South Potomac Street in Hagerstown, Maryland. And the other dates are coming up in May and July and October and then in November, our celebration. We haven't really picked themes exactly for the other ones, except for in October, October the 10th, we will have Scary Stories, one of my favorite things to do.
Mm.
And then the 21st of November, our celebration, which, and all these
it's
dates
gonna be
are
a
on
good
a
year.
Saturday. Yes. Mm-hmm. And there are other things planned. I know there's one that you're working on, but you haven't gotten set up yet.
That's right.
Right. Okay. So we won't talk about that because you don't have...
Okay. But I do have some dates to announce, but I'll do that later in the show.
And I do have information for Speak Story Series, but I can do that later.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you want to tell a story?
Well, yes. Actually, yes. Okay. I will.
I mean now.
I need to wet my whistle.
Okay.
This is, I'm going to talk about two poets. And they're both famous. One, I think, more famous than the other, And that's in popular parlance. Elizabeth Barrett and Robert Browning. Elizabeth Barrett was already a respected poet who had published literary criticisms and Greek translations in addition to poetry. Her first volume of poetry, The Seraphim and Other Poems, appeared in 1838. That was followed by poems by Elizabeth Barrett in 1844. She was born in 1806 near Durham, England. I love that word, Durham. I lived next to Durham Street in Baltimore, and I hung out with a group of boys, and we called ourselves a Durham Street Gang. We were not a real gang. You know, we didn't have jackets and beat up people and steal stuff.
You were a positive gang most of the time.
In our minds.
Your mothers might not have.
Yeah, mothers may not have. Anyway, she lived at her father's 20-bedroom mansion. She enjoyed wealth and position, but she suffered. Her health was not good. She had weak lungs and tended to be a reclusive person in her youth. And she became even more so after the death of her beloved brother in 1840. However, her poetry was well received, and she met with Wordsworth and other renowned poets. I think she led an interesting life as a person, as a female, writing poetry and publishing, in that she wasn't treated differently than the men. She was accepted because of her work being so good. Robert Browning was the son of a bank clerk. He had studied at the University of London and continued his education at his parents' home, reading extensively and writing poetry. His early work was harshly criticized. While trying his hand at drama, he discovered the dramatic monologue, which he adapted to his own poetry in a book called Dramatic Lyrics. While most critics rejected the work, Elizabeth Barrett defended it. Browning wrote to thank her for her praise and asked to meet her. She hesitated at first, but finally she relented, and the couple quickly fell in love. Barrett's strict father disliked Browning, whom he viewed as an unreliable fortune hunter, so most of the courtship was conducted in secret. A few years ago, I read a wonderful book about their relationship. And it was kind of interesting because they did sneak around, kind of like teenagers when in my day. You know, some young lady's parent might not like you. And so you could only see her if she lied to her parents and said she was going to the library or something like that. Anyway, their courtship was conducted in secret. On September 12th, 1846, while her family was away, Barrett sneaked out of the house and met Browning at St. Mary Le Bone Parish Church, where they were married. She returned home and stayed there for a week, keeping the marriage a secret. Then, after that week, she fled with Browning to Italy. She never saw her father again.
Wow.
And
didn't know that.
And didn't regret it, because her father was a bit of a tyrant. The Brownings lived happily in Italy for 15 years. Elizabeth Browning's weak health improved dramatically there, and the couple had a son in 1849. She published her best-known work, Sonnets from the Portuguese, in 1850. The sonnets chronicled the couple's courtship and marriage. In 1857, her blank verse novel, Aurora Leigh, became a bestseller, despite being rejected by critics. During her lifetime, Elizabeth Barrett Browning's reputation as a poet overshadowed that of her spouse, who was sometimes referred to as Mrs. Browning's husband. But his work later gained recognition by critics. Elizabeth died in her husband's arms in 1861. He returned to England with their son, where he became an avid socialite. In 1868, he published The Ring and the Book, a 12-volume poem about a real 17th-century murder trial in Rome. Browning died in 1889. I just think their life was such a romantic love story. It was just wonderful. I can't imagine that a man would write to a woman who had written nice things about his work and ask if he could meet her, knowing that she was a published artist and, a writer. I don't know if I would have the guts to do that. I might, maybe when I was younger I would have. So anyway, I think it's a wonderful love story.
You're a pretty gutsy guy.
She wrote what I consider to be one of the greatest poems, and I'm sure in modern days people would say the same thing. It's one of the most loved poems. I believe it's her Sonnet 43 in the book, Sonnets from the Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So, should I read that now?
Yes, please. Would
you? Okay. Oh, I had the wrong one. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach when feeling out of sight, for the ends of being an ideal grace. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet need, by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely, as men strive for right. I love thee purely, as they turn from praise. I love thee with a passion put to use in my old griefs and with my childhood's faith. I love thee with the love I seem to lose with my lost saints. I love thee with the breath, smiles, and tears of all my life. And if God choose, I shall but love thee better after death.
That is beautiful.
It is beautiful. And when I met my wife, I memorized that on purpose.
Well,
so that I could say that to her on a date.
I bet she loved it.
And she did, and she didn't laugh or anything, which was my biggest fear. I thought, suppose I start saying these words, and she says, are you kidding me? but she wouldn't do something like that.
She knows you too well.
Yes.
So, very good. Okay.
You're up.
Well, do you want to... I'm going to talk about dates first.
Okay.
Just a little bit. There's three that I can remember off the top of my head. So February 16th, I'm going to tell 7 3-minute stories that illustrate the Unitarian Universalist principles. I am the service at the church.
At the service.
Yes, oh, okay. On the 16th, which is a Sunday.
Of course.
10:45. Come early to get a good seat, you know. There's a big meeting after the church, so it could be full. Really, seriously, not because of me, but because there's the annual canvas luncheon is that day. So
a canvas
luncheon.
What's that mean?
Meaning that's when the budget for the following year is presented to the congregation. It's actually really interesting, but you can't be there. You're not allowed to be there because I could hear you moaning in the back of the church.
I love it when anybody says it's going to be the budget meeting and it's really interesting.
But you can't be there.
Yes.
March 14th. Next month.
Right.
Is the dinner tell that I have talked to you about, where 7 storytellers are going to tell 7 to 10 minute stories. You are one of the storytellers on Saturday, March 14th. I'm sorry. No. I've got my dates mixed up. Okay, it was originally scheduled for March 14th. What's happening on March 14th is the Women's Storytelling Festival in Fairfax, Virginia,
right.
Sponsored and organized by Jessica Piscatelli Robinson. And I am one of the tellers. Susan Gordon's one of the tellers. Donna Washington is one of the tellers. There are many, many, many other women. It's a 3, mostly on that Saturday, Sunday. Is March 14th a Saturday or a Sunday, Stosh? It's a Sunday.
Are you sure?
No, it's a Saturday. It's a Saturday.
It's March 14th, you said. Okay, that's the one you're talking about. Okay, well, March 7th.
I know March 14th is a Saturday.
March 7th is a Saturday, and so is March 14th.
Okay, and if you want more information, listeners, you can Google either the calendar for Ald Shebeen, which is where some of the venues will be, some of the storytelling will be. That's an Irish bar on Chain Bridge Road in Fairfax. Or you can go to...
Is it Better Said
Better
Than
Said
Done?
Better Said Than Done, thank you.
I like the name of her group.
Which Jessica Piscatelli Robinson calls her storytelling series. And so this is an event sponsored by Better Said Than Done. But you should at the very least, you should look at the full roster because there are some amazing tellers.
Is this more than one day?
Yes. But the main day is Saturday.
Saturday.
So there's an opening on Friday night, and then there's a breakfast on Sunday morning. But I'm not sure the breakfast is open to the public. It might be just for the tellers.
Right.
So, but all that information's online.
Huh.
And then, in April... The Dinner Tell, which was originally scheduled in March, but was moved because I didn't want to conflict with the story festival, with the Women's Storytelling Festival. So April 4th, which is a Saturday, you and I will both be up. We will be one of the seven tellers, tellers.
And is that at the church?
Yes, that's at the church, which is 1-3-2-4-5 Sir Foss Pike. I'm out of the habit since Stories in the Round is on hiatus for the winter until March.
What time of day?
What time of day for the dinner tell? 11:30 to 2. And it's a midday dinner. So there will be food, lots of food related to the stories.
Do we have to bring food?
You do not have to. There will be lots of food, okay. And some of the tellers will be bringing food that relates to their stories that they're going to tell, or maybe some other stories that people have heard them tell. And I really should do a much better job of getting this posted up.
Dinner Tell.
Yes. We've done this at the church before, and it was a lot of fun.
Sounds wonderful. So it should be. So we're going to be telling stories about food?
Your stories can be about the food, or you can just bring some food that's related to a story that you... For example, we're having stone soup as one of the courses for the dinner tell. Do you know about stone soup? The story of stone soup? Well, we're having stone soup.
I've never tried telling that story because it confused me the first time. but I think it's a great story to
it
tell the children. I've heard many people tell it.
And tell it well.
Yes. In fact, I've heard it, I think... The first three times I went to Jonesboro in...
Somebody told it every year.
It was at the swapping tent.
Mm, that's interesting.
I think I've only missed telling at the swapping tent once out of the 12 times I've gone there. I think it was maybe the second year because I didn't feel good. But... 3 years in a row, I heard stone soup by different people,
mm-hmm,
and it was
right.
And it was interesting.
Yeah,
you know? And yeah, I actually had a great thing happen at the swapping tent once at Jonesboro. The first time I told a story there, a lady tried to sign me up for a guild that was not in the right state, and
she kept trying to convince you that it was the right thing.
Yes, she liked my story. I told a personal story, and she liked it very much. I told her a story that I wrote, and she liked it very much. And she did. And for a number of years, she and I wrote back and forth to each other, but I wasn't interested in driving to Delaware to go to guild meetings.
She thought you should? She thought that was not too far?
She thought I should consider it. She wanted me to become a member of the guild, and she, you know...
Well, it's not, you probably drive that far to West Virginia for some guild events.
Yep. April 25th, I'm going to be driving.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay. I am now going to tell a story.
Okay. And?
Oh, but if anybody wants more information about those three events on February 16th, March 14th, or April 4th, you can call me at 301-730-1638 or email me at fanitsky, FANITSKY @hotmail.com. Okay. This first story is called The Cat Whisperer. Ike and Spike were the first, and Comrade Cat, or Cece for short, and then Baby, but she didn't last long. The Three Musketeers invaded all at once, Taj, Tippet, and Petey Cat. Emma Cheetah and Buddy Wonderful were next, and finally Earl. Now, if Earl had been the first cat we ever had, there never would have been a second. Well, who knows? Because I live with a cat whisperer. So maybe. When we first began cohabiting, boyfriend and me, long before we were married, he had two beautiful black cats he called Ike and Spike. I had met these cats, of course, in the course of getting to know my new boyfriend. They were rolling, raucous, wrestling matches on the breakfast table. If the breakfast eaters should step out of the kitchen for even a moment, those cats would be rolling around up there. Ike and Spike were entertaining and occasionally lovable, but they weren't cuddly cats. I never saw them lap sit or ask for a petting or a grooming session from people. They had each other for that. Brothers, never out of each other's five senses for long. So I never thought of boyfriend as a cat person. He lived with cats, but as far as I could tell, those cats took care of themselves. Now, there was a roommate in the second floor apartment where they all lived together, and boyfriend and roommate were good friends themselves. They'd come up through Boy Scouts, junior high school, and then high school together, and they happily shared custody of Ike and Spike. But then, boyfriend moved out of that apartment so we could share a space, and Ike and Spike stayed with roommate. When roommate moved away, Ike and Spike went to live with some women the next town over, and we never saw them again. But I had a cat. Her name was Cece, Comrade Cat, and by that time, I'd had her for 12 years. She came from an old corrugated cardboard packing box full of barely six-week-old kittens in the science room of my junior high school in Philadelphia. Deposited there in that science room by my biology teacher, who was determined to pass on the small, furry surprise packages bestowed upon her by her ancient Siamese and her neighbor's tomcat. Cece, Comrade Cat, was black all over except for her deep green eyes. Her first night in my bedroom, I was 13 years old, she established herself as a person with strong opinions. When I got into bed, I snuggled Cece in at the foot of my bed with a cat-sized, fuzzy, striped, stuffed tiger to keep her company and covered her up with a corner of my blanket, just her head sticking out. Then I got under the blanket and closed my eyes. 10 seconds later, Comrade Cat jumped on top of my head, mewing and purring. I put her back with the stuffed tiger and laid down again. 10 seconds later, she was back on top of my head. This went on for 10 minutes till we reached a compromise. I put my head on my pillow, tucked Cece under my chin, and held her there with one hand until we both fell asleep. And that's where she slept most nights for years, till I left home in Philadelphia to go to college in Chicago. My parents had temporary custody, but once I finished college and was settled in Maryland, my mother said, "Take this cat." And I did. 3 years later, I moved with boyfriend to a tiny brown shingled house next door to his oldest and my newest best friends. We'll call them J and E. Everybody else does. Comrade Cat, Cece, came with us. Within a month, she had changed her evening routine. She abandoned my lap, where she had been in the habit of sitting while I updated financial accounts or order lists from my job as kitchen manager at the School for Juvenile Delinquents, as boyfriend called it. She now sat in his lap every night while he read or sketched or watched TV. She would sit with me if boyfriend was late coming home, but as soon as he was in the house, she'd sit by his chair waiting. And if he took too long to settle down, she'd complain loudly, meow, till he came and obliged her. And that's where she'd stay till bedtime. And no more sleeping under my chin. She slept between us, curled up between our feet. Comrade Cat lived to be 21 years old. She never actually stopped being my cat. No, that's not right. She never stopped being the boss of me. From tiny kitten to 21-year-old dowager queen, she would announce her preferences and then slowly negotiate a compromise for her favorite brand of cat food, for how long I needed to brush her each morning before I dashed out the door for work, which sink her water dish needed to be filled from. She had a lot of demands. And she never stopped loving me. She just made it clear who her true Valentine was. When boyfriend became life partner by way of a brief lunchtime ceremony at City Hall and a quick celebratory lunch down the street, just the two of us, we didn't invite Cece or any of our friends and family. Cece seemed to understand that something important had transpired because that same night she moved from her sleeping nest between our feet into the small space between our pillows. And she was no svelte ingenue by then. So that move required a compromise. When we went to sleep that night, she was between our feet. When we woke in the morning, our pillows were slightly further apart, and Cece was curled up between them, facing new husband with her tail wrapped close around her nose, just barely touching his, her Valentine.
Lovely. I like it very much.
And you're not even obsessed with cats.
No, but it brought back a painful memory.
Oh, I remember.
In my whole life have I ever said to a partner that this must happen, or that, you know. But in the first week I was married as a young 25-year-old, my wife at the time, my first wife, brought her cat, her favorite cat, with her. And the cat slept in bed with us.
Much to your horror and chagrin.
On the third night of us living together as a married couple with the cat, I picked the cat up and put it out of the bedroom. And my wife objected. And I said, if you want to sleep with the cat, you can go out where she is now and use the couch or the other room. But I'm not sleeping in bed with a cat up by my face. And I can honestly say that's the only time I can ever remember until I put the cats out of the house many years later. Same thing. It's only about cats. I must be mean or something. But when my daughters had cats and they were in the house and I came home from teaching and coaching and I was the only one who seemed bothered by the cats, what would you call it, fecal deposits and sometimes vomitous deposits.
Yes, they do occasionally do that.
And for some reason, the girls couldn't clean them up and neither could my wife. They just couldn't do it. There was something too awful about it. And so, when I was told that, that it was expressed to me, I said, I will fix the problem. I collected the cats, put them out on the back porch, and that very night, evening. It took me until 11 that night. I built them a house on the back porch, a big house out of cardboard and wood, and I even installed a light bulb in there for warmth and a blanket that had slits in it that I had nailed to this. It had two it had two floors.
I have so many questions.
And I never allowed cats in the house again. I'm sure they were there when I wasn't home. But when I came home, they were gone.
If they were there when you were home, someone else besides you must have cleaned up the fecal deposits. Perhaps there were none.
I think they probably did. Maybe. I don't know. If they had done that in the first place, I wouldn't have cared. I just, you know. I was raised by a very strict mother.
Yes. I have met your mother in story and song, and that's a lovely story.
Yeah.
in that it raises all kinds of little other stories that I want to pursue. But
really?
Yeah, just lots and lots of questions.
Go ahead. I'll always answer your questions.
You may be sorry about that.
No, not at all.
Well, I'm speechless. Yeah. Whenever someone becomes attached, when a couple starts out on this journey together, there are always surprises that you're not anticipating, things that you didn't know.
I didn't know I was getting a cat.
That's right. You didn't know. And she didn't know she was getting someone who wouldn't sleep with a cat.
Yeah. Apparently, she wasn't raised properly. In my family, animals did not sleep in a bed with a human being.
Yeah.
And that's still true.
I get that.
In my house, that's true.
I believe you.
Right. You know.
But you don't have a cat.
I don't have any animals.
See, that's what I mean.
Right.
That would include cats.
Right.
Okay. I have to think about what my particular questions are, okay. So I'm not rambling where I don't belong.
That's
okay.
Trespassing?
Yes.
Or something? Well, okay. How about if I say something about stories?
Speak
stories here.
Yes. You talk about speak.
Yeah. I'm not going to give the whole list because it's too long and there are too many people.
Oh,
it is. It's,
just rattle them off real
it
fast.
It is 9 months and 11 people. How about that?
That's amazing.
Because during two of the months, there will be two people at a time. And one of those times, I am going to do a few
I bet
of them.
You could do that in 4 minutes.
Yeah, but then nobody will remember anything. The very first... March 10th, Charlotte Blake Alston, who is a fantastic storyteller. And April 14th, Sparky and Rhonda Rucker. Have you ever heard?
No, I never have.
Sparky and Rhonda Rucker are a couple. I don't know if it doesn't make any difference. He is an older gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't look quite as old as he does. But I think he's a man my age.
Wow, that's really old.
I know. But it was interesting. One of the members of the committee for Speak Story Series, when they saw the pictures, said, "Whoa. I think the age is wrong on the people for April." And I wrote and said, "No, I think the age is right. It's just that sometimes storytellers like to use a favorite picture, maybe from 30 years ago, And that's true.
I have noticed that does happen sometimes.
Last year, I was waiting for this lovely young woman to tell stories, and an old lady walked out. She was a great storyteller, but... she wasn't like her picture at all.
Okay, well, I'm not going to ask any questions about that one.
Okay, so Sparky and Rhonda Rucker are in April, and for 3 days they will be doing storytelling activities at Shepherd University under the providence of the Speak Story series. They are the Appalachian Storytellers in Residence. And I actually got to perform once with them at a college up north, up northwest, Western Maryland. That's not the name of college. It's a college.
Frostburg
College. Right. And
except it's university.
Frostburg University. Yeah. Everybody's a university nowadays. Yes. Used to be colleges, not a university. And in another 20 years, they'll probably be called something really fancy.
Conglomerates.
There you go. So anyway, I was very pleased when I got to share the stage with them. They are musicians, and they sing and tell stories, and they're just wonderful. So then in May, one of the absolute best, wonderful storytellers we could possibly have, Kevin Kling, will be there. And that's going to be in May 12th. And then in June 8th, Laura Packer. June 9th, I'm sorry. I can't read my own writing. So that's enough. I'm not going to go beyond that.
Okay.
Because I talk too much anyway.
Halfway through.
There you go. Okay, so.
So you're going to tell another story?
Well, I was going to be brazen and read another poem.
Okay.
Actually, I have two more poems, but one of them is long.
One of them's brazen.
No, well, it's brazen because it's something I wrote. Actually, both of them are something I wrote. I used to write poetry.
I think I knew that.
I used to, and I used to write a lot of poetry, but then I stopped for some reason. I ran out of poetic words or something.
You ran out of pose.
No, yeah, I think I really stopped doing that because I started writing plays, and the two didn't mesh in my brain. So this is a poem I wrote in the 90s, and it's a very special. It's called On Soft Breezes. On soft breezes, your name comes, or perhaps just from my mind. And my heart beats more quickly as I think of what I'll find when I travel to respond and say, I love you so. How could I help but answer and whisper that I care and say I'm yours, my love, because you are so fair. Your touch means more than words can tell. You thrill me each time I sense you being there. And my wonder goes on at the sight of you. My delight in knowing my love is true. It heightens each moment I come to know you are my desire, my partner, my friend. Ever more and more as we grow on soft breezes. That's a poem I wrote for Terry, my wife.
Wow.
And
this is a side of you I've never seen before.
And when I gave her that, in I think 1996, when we first started dating, she is a musician, mm-hmm. and she was a professional harpist and vocalist. And so the next time we were together, because we hadn't started living together yet, I was living in Baltimore, she was living in Frederick at the time. The next time I visit her, she said, I want to play something for you. And she sat at her harp, and she sang this as a song.
Oh!
And it's wow! And it is so beautiful when she sings it. And she wrote the music to it. And she actually has performed that a few times, never telling anybody who it is or what it is or why. It's just it's a lovely song, and. She was very romantic, yeah, really. And on the The day I proposed to her and asked her to marry me, we were in Nashville, Tennessee, and it was a great adventure. It's a funny story that I'll tell sometime about getting money to buy a diamond ring.
Oh.
It was really exciting. And there was no robbery involved.
Oh.
But the very next day, it started the evening that we became engaged, but over a period of a few hours, Terry wrote a song. And the title of it is On Bended Knee in Tennessee. And she has performed that. And it was about me proposing to her and us becoming engaged in Nashville, Tennessee. She wrote it on kind of like a country song. It was very nice. I'm very proud that I could write something like this.
Yeah.
I wrote it in an interesting place. I wrote it in the classroom while my students who were in sixth grade at the time, I had given them an assignment, and it was a writing assignment. It was a science class. And it just so happened that the kids spoke very openly to me. I encourage that in all my classes. They speak up at the, and the kid says. So while we're doing this, writing this assignment, and it'll take us most of the period, you're just going to sit there and watch us and just relax. And I said, well, what would you like me to do? Well, you should write something too. So I said, okay, fine, I will. And so that's when I wrote On Soft Breezes.
Did they want to see what you wrote?
They asked me, and I said, no, it was private. But I did show them that I had, I showed them paper, the blank paper to mm-hmm. begin with, and then I showed, and I said it was very private. I said it was a message to someone that I loved. And the girls really liked that. 12-year-old boys were like,
blah. Oh, dear.
But anyway, it was pretty neat.
Yeah.
So, do you have another story?
I do. I have a much shorter story.
All right.
So when I told the story of Comrade Cat, I...
what a great name.
Also, I mentioned Baby, who was another cat. Baby was the homeliest kitten I ever saw. She was mostly white with a long striped orange tail, a little splash of orange on her left ear, one orange paw, and one orange foot, not her whole paw, just one foot, and half of an orange mustache just on her upper lip that looked like a bit of stray salmon that was stuck there on her face. Now, her fur was really soft and heavenly to touch, and she was a very affectionate cat, but she was never much to look at. And what I remember is that I rescued her from a family of five tow-headed children, blonde children, toddlers up through a tough-talking adolescent who sounded like they might eat cat noodle soup for dinner that evening if I didn't take this kitten off their hands. Anyway, she came to Maryland in the back of an old VW with me to live in our house 600 yards off the Appalachian Trail. It had running water, except for a month or two in the summer when our very shallow well dried up every year. But there was a two-seater out back that listed a bit in the direction of the trail as if it might leap off its two fragrant two-seater holes and hike off into the mountains on some moonlit night. And there was a genuine iconic cutout moon shape on the door of this tiny little building. Now, Baby moved with me again when I set up housekeeping. I forgot to tell you. Baby loved that privy. She really liked it in there. And she would follow me down there no matter what time of day or night, whether it was stifling heat, sunshine, whether it was cold. We had a lot of sleeting rain in that part of Maryland. But she didn't like deep snow. So 6 to 8 inches was about her limit for her to follow me down there. But she'd sit on those old gray planks that covered the double hole seat, or that was the seat over the double holes, and she'd watch and listen to the odd sounds that she heard echoing around that narrow space. That's my favorite little baby story. But she moved with me when I set up housekeeping with boyfriend, that story I told you earlier. But I made a mistake because Cece had been an indoor cat all her life, and she never wanted to go outside much. She'd sit on the porch with me at the Appalachian Trail House, but she never went roaming around on her own. But Baby was the adventurer in the family. And my first day back to work after we moved to the little brown shingled house, this was a Monday after a Saturday move, Baby insisted it was time to go exploring. Now, she'd had two days there. She was inside and outside, in and out all the time we were home. And she was from Chicago, for land's sake. Intrepid, a real explorer, so I thought. So I let her out and locked the door and drove off to work. And when I came home 10 hours later, she was nowhere to be found. So I walked the neighborhood calling for her and looking for her. I put up lost cat signs every place I could think of. But some neighbors told me that they had seen her. They told me over time they kept seeing her, not just once, but months and even more than a year after she first disappeared. Well, now it's been more than 40 years since she disappeared. So she can't possibly be alive. But I've seen her myself more than once, not just driving by that old house, but as far away from there, as far away as Shepherdstown and Kekapin State Park in West Virginia. There can't be another cat quite so homely as that one with that little salmon mustache, half a little tiny mustache over her lip. And once I even saw her up a mountain road about 2 miles from Deep Creek Lake up in Garrett County. She was just sitting in front of an old falling down privy, like she was waiting for somebody.
That's sad.
It was very sad. I've always felt very guilty about that.
Kind of spooky, too. They're probably her children.
Well, that could be. She did have a litter of children. But that was in Chicago.
You know,
she never had. We had her spayed after that.
Well, but that doesn't always work. I've heard really? Lots of marriages where they said, "I thought you couldn't have children." I have a daughter that had a child at 43.
Wow!
And after she was told that she could not conceive, all her life she was told that.
Boy!
It was a very big surprise. mostly to her and her husband.
Yeah.
Because they did not count on having children, but they'd have a wonderful little girl.
That's a good story.
Yeah, who's going to be 8 years old.
Wow.
And just in case you want to check my math, my daughter's going to be 51, so the numbers work out. let's see. Hey, go ahead.
No, I'm looking at the time to see how much of a story we have left.
Well, it's 53 minutes. Okay. We probably have 2 minutes left.
Okay.
I have a real short marriage story.
Okay, a Valentine's story.
Well, it's about people in love. So this little boy and a little girl met in first grade. And they were in country. And the little girl always wore a dress, always was in a dress. Even though they grew up in a country area, in country school, and a lot of the girls, you know, wore sort of overalls or pants or something like that because, you know, they would play. But from first grade on, she always wore a dress. And she always wore a beautiful ribbon around her neck. Well, over the years, she and this boy became very good friends, became close. When they went to high school, they started dating. Finally, after they graduated from high school, he proposed. And she accepted with only one rule, that he was never to ask her again to take the ribbon off, because she wore, and she had more than one, and she was never without it. And he said, oh, sure. He didn't care, really. But the truth was, it drove him crazy, wondering about why she wore a ribbon all the time. And he thought maybe she had, a birthmark or something, or had a disease and had some kind of scars. Anyway, they were married for a few years, and finally one night it just got on his nerves so much he couldn't stand it. He was lying next to her in bed, and she was sound asleep, sleeping on her side. He reached over and undid the ribbon, and her head rolled off the bed.
I first heard that story as a kid around a campfire at camp, and it made me laugh and laugh.
That's one of those short, fast stories.
Yeah.
I had a radio announcer in Arkansas, was doing a broadcast from a camp being opened near the village I lived in. And he said, oh, you're that storyteller guy. I said, yeah, I'm the one that's been bugging you to put me on the air. I want to have a storytelling program. And he said, all right. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 2 minutes. Tell me a story right now. So I told him that story. And he was so shocked that I could tell a story without, preparation and notes and all this stuff anyway. But then anyway, it was good. And people actually heard that. It was the only local radio station, but it broadcast quite a distance. And it was very popular in the place where I live, Fairfield Bay. And so he had a lot of people contacting him about that and said, you should have the storyteller on sometime. And after a while, he did have me on as a guest a few times.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
And look how far you've come.
I know. Okay. So you've been listening to the Storytelling Hour on enlightenedradio.org, independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is your Storytelling Hour co-host, Stacia Olkowski, with
Fanny Crawford.
Okay, so let's see. I lost my place. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand our own stories. Thanks for listening. Up next,
Cafe Jazz.
Cafe Jazz.
Whoa. Wow. Goodbye. See you next week.